We'll watch you for a minute. Don't worry. I have a lot I want to do today. We have to begin. I have to.
I'm going to take a little longer today. Like the end of the show, I want to deal with two contemporary issues on this aspect. Okay. Let us begin. Where do we stand? Today is Monday, May the 6th, and Baruch Hashem 2013. And I just spoke with my brother. We both agreed. I'm living here since 69, my brother since 73. But we both agreed, Kol HaKavod L'Tzahal, to pull off what they pulled on Shabbos, and to be able to pull it off without calling up Miluim, and to pull it off so strategically well. I don't know if you're hearing the news today, but Syria is telling the world that we killed endless of their top soldiers, whatnot, the guards around the president, and Kol HaKavod to our prime minister, Bibi Netanyahu, who's not speaking too much. So we have a lot we have to be thankful for. Now, today is an interesting shiur to say the least. Anyway, I'm aware of that theory. Kitvei Yad is the key word, not what you said. And tell your uncle that I spoke about it in depth. It's one of a number of theories with the Vilna Gaon. And if he hears those lectures from many years ago, he'll pick up that I spoke about it. It comes up again with the Jewish Theological Seminary when I spoke about the seminary. It comes up again with Professor Lieberman. And what the truth is, we will never know. But it's a fascinating theory, and there's no doubt that the Vilna Gaon did have a feeling for Kitvei Yad and correct readings. Now, last week was very exciting because the great-great-grandson of Harry Fischel sat in on the class. We spoke about Harry Fischel, and again, rabbis have great ideas, but generally speaking, rabbis are not people who know how to act. They're not practical. And we have to give all the credit to Mendel Gottesman, to Nathan Lamport, and Harry Fischel, who made this dream come true. And in 1928, with the opening of Yeshiva College, the new building, Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, a college and opening, times have changed with great implications for the Torah community. And we started last week, I developed the idea, I tied it into contemporary Israel as well, Torah, and as a Talmud of the Rav, I'm not ashamed to quote the Rav, thesis, antithesis, or antithesis, and synthesis. And this is an ongoing cycle, the Hegelian dialectics. I look at pictures of my great-grandparents, and there's no question they have long beards and black clothes on, and they lived in a different world. Is our Yiddishkeit the same? Absolutely. Is our Shabbat the same? Our Kashrut the same? But our Weltanschauung, our outlook, our deportment, believe me, they didn't know baseball or the equivalent of it. And this is an ongoing challenge. And Torah constantly faces this challenge, particularly since we came out of the ghetto. And how to deal with this challenge is a source of great debate that rages in the Torah world until this very moment. I need not tell you there's a world of difference between, for the sake of argument, Ne Yisrael today and Yeshiva University today. And there's a great difference between Satmar and Lubavitch and Belz and Vishnitz and any square and Ne Yisrael and, of course, Yeshiva University. Lakewood, throwing Lakewood, the Israeli scene, what's going on here with the Shas and Agudat Yisrael and Degel HaTorah and Chardalim and Sionim Datiyim. And this is part of life, and it's nothing to be laughed at, but nothing to be frightened about. Now, that source I showed you from Kobol Avelot, which is an esoteric source, but the rabbi of Columbus, Ohio, his critique of the modern Orthodox rabbis developing, it shows you head-on the clash, the thesis, the antithesis. Which yeshiva university? Remember, this is revolutionary. See what makes yeshiva university unique. You go to Baltimore, you meet someone there in Baltimore who will maledict, you're from yeshiva university, you went to a school, it's no good, it's this, it's that. So you'll say to him, what's the difference between Ei Yisrael and you go to John Hopkins? And he'll answer you, it's two separate institutions. Here I know I'm in a kosher world, I'm here in a Gentile world. I go to the Gentile school because I at times require it. I want to make a living, I want to be successful, I want to be prosperous. But yeshiva university, it's under one roof. And this can engender a lot of criticism. And here we went in, I gave you, at the end of the class, I gave you some very concrete examples, which I write about in Bernard Rebel. And someone, a student, cautioned me this morning. He said, Rebbe, this Yitzchak Shachar, who you created, if someone 100 years from now will hear a single shir, he'll think he's a real person. If someone hears a number of shir, so I will let Yitzchak Shachad disappear. But believe me, it's easy to talk about him than to talk about Rakefet. It's easier. Understand where I'm coming from. But anyway, in Bernard Revel, I raised the issue, the honorary degrees, the Herbert Lehman or the Albert Einstein. And these issues are not readily swept under the carpet. I read to you Professor Isaac's letter to Rabbi Revel, where he takes Revel to task, and he says, how can you give a doctor of humane letters to Albert Einstein, a guy who doesn't daven in a shul, a guy who's Mechalel Shabbos, a guy who oichel nof nevelut and chreifa, the guy who's bilot asura? No, so he's Albert Einstein. How do you give an honorary degree? What is that statement saying to the students or to the masses of East European Jews on the streets of New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Boston, etc.? And these are delicate issues. It's not that I don't have answers, but the answers said, to quote Rebbe, sometimes the Rebbe quoting Rebbe, to quote the Rav quoting Reb Chaim, the questions are more important than the answers. You understand what I'm saying? You have to be sensitive to this issue. Now, I do want to say that in the world today, only we have multi-billionaire Orthodox Jews. So today it's a little bit different. But 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 60 years ago, how many Orthodox shuls honored people who were Mechalalei Shabbos, and their only greatness was their ability to give a few $1,000 to the shul? Halacha kama v'kama, when Yeshiva University, which is represents Torah on the national scene, might even be the international scene, you give an honorary doctorate to Albert Einstein, and Einstein says to Rabbi Revel, the way you spoke about me is what you wish I were, not what I am. All right, this issue hangs fire. There were many, many smaller issues, and I ended off the class. The innovation of yeshiva boys in athletics, running for touchdowns, throwing baskets, today hitting home runs, pitching no-hitters. They told me Yeshiva College has someone on their team that is top-quality pitcher. I had a student here, and a wonderful student in the tail end of BMT, at the end of my 1920, I taught there 20 years. The last year, you should know, I taught for next to nothing because I'd been retired. They got rid of it. It's a whole story. But I wanted to say BMT formed, changed my life, changed a lot of lives. I wanted to say I was associated with BMT for 20 years. That last year I taught for next to nothing. And I had a fabulous student, and he married someone I know very well. I was at the wedding. Yeah, and it turns out he's a first-rate pitcher. When they organized tried to organize a baseball league here, in his mid-30s or late-30s, he was one of the star pitchers, maybe early 40s already. I'm losing track of time. And who ever heard yeshiva boys in baseball? You know, all right, all this was chiddush. Now, Let me move forward and let me come into a very fascinating area. It's not just the innovation. You're running a college, you need help, you need people, you need a faculty, you need accreditation. And you're going to have people who are not Shomer Torah mitzvot. Even today in the year 2014, I don't believe you can establish a liberal arts college with every faculty member a Shomer Torah mitzvot. Certainly 80, 90 years ago, where are you going to get people who are from? How many from people were there? And a college can't just take someone who knows a little bit or someone who has a master's. In order to get accreditation, you have to have people who are accomplished, who are well known in their fields. And here, one of the individuals that helped Rabbi Revel immensely was a person named Dr. Shelley Safier, S-A-F-A-I-R. Now, Professor Gorak, today at Yeshiva University, Professor Gorak is the professor of American Jewish history. He made one mistake. I believe I wrote him a letter. I don't like to correct people, but sometimes a mistake is so basic you have to correct them. He writes about Rabbi Revel gathering around him the few individuals who were committed to Torah Derech Eretz, and he puts in Professor Shelley Safier's name. Some of the people, like Dr. David Stern, was Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, absolutely. But Professor Safier, Dr. Safier, was a typical East European kid. His parents may have been Shomer Shabbos, I don't know. But he grew up on the east side of New York, winds up in Columbia, gets a doctorate, I told you, in biology on the asexual reproduction of the tsetse fly. Shmuel, we used to laugh when we were kids, but that's what his doctorate was on, that's what scholarship was about. And he was of tremendous help to Rabbi Revel. He organized the high school, he helped get the college faculty together. And to a certain degree, I would describe him in the formative years of Talmudical Academy and Yeshiva College as Rabbi Revel's academic right-hand man. And he was both principal of the high school and dean of the college. Now, there's a very fascinating picture that we have on the... all of you know that at the Reitz dinner, they showed a video, a 9-minute video. It was not a scholarly documentary, but it was a fascinating video with the request to raise tens and tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars for an endowment fund that Yeshiva University should never again have financial difficulties. So I went through the video, I think Daniel sent me a link to it, and there's a fascinating picture here. And not many, I don't know how many people are alive today who would, if you come close, here is, it's a fascinating picture. There is Dr. Shelley Safier surrounded by a graduating class of Talmudical Academy. The picture has to be from the early 1920s. First of all, look at the way they're all wearing big kippot, and look at the way they're all wearing ties and jackets. This is a different world. When you went to a baseball game in the 1920s and the 1930s into the 40s, you went with a tie, a jacket, and a straw hat. Can you believe it? That's the way people attended baseball games, and there was very little cursing. It's not today that they don't sell beer after the sixth inning, the seventh inning. Today, you go to baseball games, it's frightening the language you hear around you. Anyway, that is Dr. Shelley Safier. So I can understand how Jeffrey Gorak, looking at a picture like this, reached the conclusion that he must be a Torah Umada personality. All right, he was a wonderful person. He helped Rabbi Revel. He established the high school, and he put together the first faculty of Yeshiva College, and he put Yeshiva College on the map. Gentlemen, we have arrived, and I'm telling you in advance what I'm about to tell you. I've never spoken about publicly before, but I feel I have to get it out of my system, and I owe my cousin, Rabbi Rebel, a defense, and every syllable I'm telling you is true. Story begins as follows. When I entered MTA in 1951, Shelley Sapphire was Sapphire. His name already had been changed. He added an E from Sapphire. He went to Sapphire. From S-A-F-I-R to S-A-P-H-I-R-E. It's one and the same person. Like Rothkopf, Rakefet. So Shelley Sapphire, when you entered the MTA in 51, whenever his name was mentioned, the class snickered. Everyone laughed. Because there was an oral tradition about the scandal. And some of the professors who had been there from the 1920s, some of the teachers in high school who had been there from the 1920s, 1930s, and you gotta remember, the teachers we had in MTA were so happy to teach there. Why? They came from public school. Even if they taught at the finest public school, Bronx High School of Science, MTA was like a breath of fresh air. Because in MTA, you faced the class where 99% of the kids were anxious to learn. You know, we were a different type of child. If you went to MTA, you either were an immigrant or you were a kid ready to change the world after Hitler. The immigrants wanted to get ahead, wanted to Americanize, wanted knowledge. Kids like me, like Jerry Blau, like Moshe Agut, like Jerry Blitzstein, we were all American kids. But we knew Europe had been wiped out, and we wanted to change the entire world. I was a kid, I had one desire in life, that every Jew in America should be a Shomer Shabbos. That was my desire. So we wanted knowledge, we had to change the world. So we had very good teachers and a very good relationship. The minute you mentioned Dr. Safia's name, and he was a principal, but he was removed. He was principal of MTA, he was principal of Central Yeshiva, principal of all the high schools, essentially. He was the overall head of all the general studies. But he was a distant figure, and he taught a course of biology in the college. The minute you mention his name, everyone snickered. I remember Leiba, we had a teacher of English who was a real old-timer, was in yeshiva already in 51, maybe for 20 years. And Leiba would say to the class with a straight face, "The good that men do lives on forever." And you know, as if to say, "The bad goes down to the grave." He was quoting some English literature, you can tell me what. And we all would laugh and go further. So we always knew, and of course, being an inquisitive kid, I found out what went on, what the story was. Now, fast forward. Open up the Land of Legacy, the book that just came out, go to page 100. So the Land of Legacy describes this little kid, Ani Rothkopf, coming into to Dr. Bernard Lander, the head of the graduate school, looking for a topic to write his doctorate on. And Rabbi Lander says, "Come back in 2 weeks. I wanted to write on the Netziv, but we got to think about it." And then 2 weeks later, he tells me the faculty has met and they want me to write on Rabbi Revel, etc., etc. And now I meet with the faculty. And at the faculty meeting, the faculty raises the issue of the scandal. And they put into the minutes, and this is Bernard Revel Graduate School. You can take it as you wish from the point of view of scholarship. We are assigning Rabbi Rothkopf with this topic, but we have a condition that he should not write anything about the scandal. It will harm Yeshiva University. Fine. Fast forward another 3-4 years, I finished my doctorate. And now the big day has come to defend the doctorate. Those of you who are studying for a doctorate, particularly in the humanities, you know what I'm talking about. You have to defend your doctorate. And supposedly, it's not just your three professors who sponsored you who have read the doctorate, but everyone on the faculty, and they're ready to pull you apart. And at this meeting, in 66, it has to be, one of the professors, I can mention his name, Sidney B. Honig, gets up and he says, "This is not scholarship. Why, how can you write about Rabbi Revel? Nothing about the scandal." Wow. Gan chavona zachul letov, right? Mrs. Conan is sitting there, the recorder of the graduate school. Again, you can read about it in the Land of Legacy or in Washington. And the poor little Rothkopf says, "Dr. Honig, how can I write about the scandal if the faculty enjoined me from touching it?" Mrs. Cardin says, "Let me check the notes. Let's adjourn the meeting for 2 minutes. I'm going into the other room where I have the files." She comes back a minute and a half later with the notes of 4 years earlier. "Rabbi Rothkopf is absolutely right. Here in the notes, Rabbi Rothkopf has assigned this thesis, this topic. He is enjoined from writing about the scandal because it may harm the appearance of the yeshiva, fundraising, etc., public relations." Baruch Hashem, with that beginning, I defend my thesis, and they throw you out of the room, and then they call you back in 10 minutes later. "We are happy to inform you that the faculty is awarding you the degree, blah, blah." Okay. Do you want to know something? When they told me back 4 years earlier that I can't write about the scandal, I now stopped my research. Some of you have read Washington, so you know my research begins with two suitcases that Mrs. Revel had ready in the Broadmoor Hotel for the custodian to pick up and throw out. I open the suitcases. The first documents I find are about the scandal. If I wanted to write a novel, I could have written a magnificent novel, had a bestseller, and I'd be sitting here not just giving a shiur or a lecture in Gris, but I would own the campus. But Baruch Hashem, I have other values. Now, and it was so funny, the first papers I found, the first papers, and all the papers say, "Please rip this up." Rabbi Revel didn't rip it up. I didn't rip it up. I don't have the heart. I don't know. Who knows what will be with it, but I can't rip it up. Gentlemen, what was the scandal? The scandal was very simple. And this is part of the problem. Professor Safir, Dean Safir, was not a Shomer Shabbos, was not a Shomer of Torah, was a nice East European kid who still retained Jewish identity, who was married to a nice Jewish woman, who had Jewish children, and he had an affair that lasted many years with a secretary in the yeshiva's premises. In order to run an institution, you need secretaries. It's not like today. Today, Gris essentially runs without one secretary, because Rabbi Bednish grew up in a different world. He knows how to type. Rothkopf grew up in a world where if Rothkopf would have said, "I want to take a course in typing," the whole world would have laughed at him and go, "Shame, shame, what kind, put a skirt on, well, who the heck are you? I would have to go for psychological help, Moshe, until today they'd have to wrap it out of my mind that I wanted to learn typing." Rabbi Bednash doesn't need a secretary. Sherry takes mercy on her Rav Rekefet that she handles his correspondence. His mama, she does me a degree, my Talmidim, all thank Sherry, because they all know it's the greatest asset. Why, we used to have three fabulous secretaries. You have no idea how capable. You have no idea what we had, one office only for alumni activity. Things were, Richard Joel, whatever the reasons were, all gone. History. But an institution, early 30s, it began in 31, needed secretaries. This secretary was an Eshet Ish. Now, I want to ask you a question. Go into the mutton mind. Look what's happening in Israel today. I shake, I shiver. I spoke about it with my children, my grandchildren over Shabbos. The papers were filled One of the most prominent TV personalities is being investigated. A nice Jewish boy, look at his face. He doesn't even look Israeli. He looks like he stepped out of the shtetl and came to Israel after the Holocaust. He's being investigated. He propositioned tens and tens of women. No, what's wrong with that when you're in a position of power in the state of Israel? If an officer says to a sergeant working under him, you want next weekend off, etc., etc., it's a criminal offense. If a boss, a woman working in the state of Israel, this is the law. New Jersey has laws like this. New York does not. If you know what went on in New York with certain scandals, people were not put on trial. But so this guy, Emanuel Rosen, it's no secret, the newspapers over the weekend quoted emails he sent. Today, everything you write on an email is evidently recorded for posterity. In heaven, when they're going to show you your sins, they're going to show you a video, going to show you your emails. I'm very careful. Every letter I write, boy, all I write is Divrei Torah and Bracha. Nothing else. Because in 50 years, 100 years, I'm going to be shown all these documents. He writes to a woman, propositions her. She writes back, Ani yeshitish v'yeshi yiladim. He writes back to her, umrabakach. I couldn't believe it. This is the New York Times. This was the Mary, what's her name? Maura Dold. What's her name? That Catholic woman wrote about, she writes op-ed pieces. And she wrote about Clinton. He played with the rules. Any man can proposition any woman. If the woman says no, he walks away. Clinton's a tzaddik. Maureen Dowd, am I pronouncing her name right? You can correct me. I couldn't believe my eyes, the way the world thinks. If you're not like Katsav, Katsav propositioned women and then he raped them, so he's in jail. But if you don't rape them, wow, wow. So you got to remember, to this Safia's mind in the 1930s, no, she's an Eshetish, so what? This affair went on for a number of years. Everyone knew about it. It was a small yeshiva. There was a lot of gossip. His wife sent letters to Rabbi Revel every other day, pleading with him to intervene, pleading with him for the sake of her children. It turns out that he was sitting with her in a car and doing things on the concourse. He got to know the Bronx, and his two children walked by and saw their father like that. Then there was an incident where he came Shabbos. You know, he was already a professor, a dean, made a little money. He was playing tennis on Shabbos. He forgot his tennis clubs in his office at the yeshiva. So you see, this became a major scandal. Everyone knew about it. Professor Chaim Bogomilsky Greenstein, Chrono Levrach, I mentioned a famous name and you all look at me with blank stares today. Greenstein was Rabbi Revel's office boy from 1959. He later became the Registrar of Teachers Institute. He later did the doctorate at Columbia University that Rakefet writes about in Washington. He gives you the cynical comments all the students used to make. Have you ever held the history of the Jews in New York City? First part, I mean, look at the exact title, and I quote him in Revel, I quote him in Washington, I probably quote him elsewhere. It's a fabulous doctorate. The sources, what that man put into it. So the cynics, like little Rothkopf, we used to say, no wonder he never married. His children and grandchildren are embedded in these voluminous footnotes. So Dr. Greenstein used to say to me, Yitz, he used to look, remember, do you remember Dr. Greenstein? He had those, the twinkle in his eyes. He had the twinkle in his eyes. He was always had a certain freshness to him. I guess his wife never beat it out of him. So he never married her. Don't let me get started. I know the girl he was crazy about, and she rejected him. And her children went to school with me, and he could never get over that rejection. And he never married. And Dr. Einstein would say to me, Arnold, you should know there was a mamza who went to Yeshiva University. I never told anyone his name. I said, Baruch Hashem, you never told anyone his name. You're not allowed to. That kid was the result. of this affair. No, what do you do? No, I want to ask you, what do you do? And this is a little yeshiva and yeshiva college. And this is the crown jewel of the Torah community. And here you have a dean of the yeshiva who's having an affair with an employee of the yeshiva. And Rabbi Rebel had a tremendous problem here. And if you go to Bernard Rebel, let me give you the exact page. Here it is. Page 196. So you see, I tell a story. I can't leave it out altogether. During June 1936, these problems reached the peak with Safir's resignation as the dean of the college. A new dean was not appointed during Rebel's lifetime, and this led many annoying collegiate problems for Rebel to cope with. Professor Moses Isaacs, that's a member of the Isaac family, a member of the college faculty since its inception, was appointed assistant to the president to aid Rebel in administering the college. And essentially, he was the dean, even though he never had the title. The registrar was Jacob Hartstein. Some of you may recognize the name, one of the famous Hartstein brothers, who later becomes the founder of a community college in New York City and is the president for many, many years. He assisted Isaacs, and that's the way they ran the college. Ah, Revel had a tremendous dilemma. What do you do with Sapphire? And here, gentlemen, we come to a problem that many Gedolei Yisrael have. Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik would quote time and again the Chovat HaLevavot, Ibn Pakuda, Bachya Ibn Pakuda. The Chovat HaLevavot, that the most essential trait of being a Jew is Hakarat HaTov. We have to be Makar Tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and of course we have to be Makar Tov to those in life who instruct us and help us, etc. Mori Rebbe, give you Divrei Torah. Hakarat HaTov is so important that Moshe Rabbeinu almost gave up when you'd see it Mitzrayim. Because of Hakarat HaTov. Knew what was the Rav talking about. The Rav illustrated it. You're about to leave Egypt. Pharaoh is going crazy. Get the heck out of here. You're a bunch of murderers. Every Bukhara is dying. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't leave till I find the Atzmot Yosef. And he has to send Serach Padasha to show where the Aron is so they can take it out of the water and bring it to Eretz Yisrael. Do you imagine he almost gave up Yetziat Mitzrayim because of Hakarat HaTov? It's a big problem. How far does Hakarat HaTov do go? In the history of Mizrahi in America, if it should ever be written, they're going to find out that one of the biggest problems Mizrahi ever backed into was the result of Mori Rebbe and his Hakarat HaTov to a certain individual. Don't want to elaborate. Not important. Yeah, it's very important to understand. Mori Rebbe, if you don't know Yitzchak, you are lacking.
So then enlightenment
is very simple. This man was president of the Mizrahi. There were rumors about him in nursing homes, what was happening. So they came to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, how can we let this man continue as president of the Mizrahi? So the Rebbe said he did a lot of good. We can't embarrass him. We'll have three presidents. And that's how they had three presidents. And then when this person was arrested, everyone came down hard on Mizrahi, but at least he wasn't the sole president. Hakarat HaTov. Rabbi Revel reached a compromise. Dean Sapphire would no longer be involved with the college, but he would remain the principal of the high school. This was the compromise that Revel reached. I can tell you that for years afterwards, including my time in the yeshiva, people raised the issue, Mimanavshach. If he can remain principal of the high school, why can't he remain dean of the college? And if you kick him out as dean of the college, why do you let him remain in the high school? And there was a lot of criticism of Rabbi Rebel. I can only tell you that I don't know what I would have done. This is why I never could be a dean. I could never be a Rosh Yeshiva. I could never be a president. I could never amount to anything in life. All these offers I had over the decades. I'm not capable of firing anyone. I'm not capable of, I don't know. It's very hard for me to tell someone off, to be negative. I always try to see the positive. All right. I never amounted to anything. You pay a price. Maybe I didn't pay a price. Maybe I did. Leave it for you to decide. Rabbi Revel was in a terrible position. And I understand what he did. He felt such hakarat hatov to Sapphire because he built the high school. He got the first college faculty together. He got accreditation for Yeshiva College. With that hakarat hatov, he couldn't fire him altogether. On the other hand, as a public figure, there's no question that the dean of the college was amongst more widely recognized, known person than the principal of a high school. That was his compromise. Did he do right? Did he do wrong? Leave it to you to decide. Hold on. I just want to finish up. You know, when I came into the yeshiva, it was, you know, rumors, snickers. 51 was not that long afterwards. 36, 51, 15 years, 16 years. People spoke about it. When I did my doctorate, I uncovered, like any other president or Rosh Yeshiva, pro and con. There was a lot of deep feeling in favor of Rabbi Rebel, and a lot of criticism. Should have done this, should have done that. And the Dean Sapphire story came up. I couldn't talk about it, I couldn't speak about it, and I was too young even to think it out and hakarat hatov. And you know, we're all human beings. I'm always makatova to Rabbi Moshe Horowitz, Whitey Horowitz. Very makatova, all the years makatova. Why? Very simple, because in 1969, unwanted, unsought, uncalled. You follow me, Moshe? People come in Aliyah, they expect the bands to rap out the music. Doesn't happen that way. It doesn't happen that way. And Reb Moshe Horowitz, I don't even know how, when, where, but he knew that he knew my brother from Washington. My brother had done his medical service in Walter Reed Hospital, and he was dean of the school there. This is the 1960s. He knew my brother, and he knew he had an older brother who was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, had gotten a doctorate in Jewish history, and he gets in touch. I had no phone. It was 69, and they send me a telegram, and he wants to see me. And he says, look, I'm organizing this new school, new program, new everything. He's looking for someone in Jewish history. And he brought me into BMT. I'm Maket Taiva. I understand Rabbi Revel. This comes back to haunt me. Right as I'm going in Aliyah, Dr. Grinstein tells me, Dr. Sapphire has retired. He's moved to the coast. Before he moved to the coast, Dr. Grinstein, started an audio history of Yeshiva University, recording people from the early years. He just made a recording of Dr. Sapphire. He says, I want you to hear this recording and give me your opinion. And on the recording it says, not to be listened to for 50 years, recorded in 1968, let's say 69, not to be listened to until 50 years later. And there I am, one of my final deeds on American soil as an American citizen, listening to the recording. And I wrote a note to Dr. Grinstein. It's not historically accurate. He's, you know, he justifies himself and he says he had enemies and they spread false rumors. But I felt very bad. And with that, I parted from the United States and I fine-tuned when I was working on Revel for JPS, I fine-tuned that paragraph. I couldn't ignore it. I had to acknowledge that there was opposition. On the other hand, I fine-tuned it. Let future generations, if they ever revisit the history of Yeshiva, let them deal with it, and perhaps they'll agree with me, perhaps they'll disagree. Now, in the context of history, when we look at the scandals Yeshiva has today, now what do you say? Is this pachim ktanim or not? And I share with you a terrible story that breaks my heart. And as you recall, during the press conference, I apologized to Balei Tshuva, but a few years ago, there was a tremendous expose of something that had happened at Michlala. Now, for whatever the reasons are, I haven't taught in Michlala since 85. People still think I teach there because I was so active there and so identified with the place. And I was very upset by this story. I knew some of the players involved. As a matter of fact, I knew all the players involved, including the girl, not the victim, but the professor who blew the whistle. She had been my student in Michlala many years earlier. So I came home from the cult on Friday night. I'm eating at my daughter, who lives near me, and my grandson. I'm very depressed. And my eldest grandson from that family says to me, Saba, why are you so depressed? At least there was a man and a woman, the Michlala story. And I said to him, now I'm doubly depressed, because you're right. You follow? Look at the problems we have today. I don't know, it's beyond my comprehension. Rabbeinu, teaching Torah. Beyond my comprehension. But I always used to think Yeshiva had only one scandal in its glorious history. Unfortunately, right now we're living through a major atomic bomb. Yes, Ellie. Wag it out.
Just to go back to what you said, which wife was complaining to Dr. Ellie get rid of him?
It was Shelley Sapphire's wife. She knew what was going on. She knew when he didn't come home. She would write to her. She was very close to Rabbi Rebbe. You have to understand, the families interacted. And she was pleading with Rabbi Rebbe, call him on the carpet, call him to order, threaten to fire him, do this, do that. Rebbe didn't know what to do.
And the secretary didn't care.
Look, I don't know who the secretary was, but what can I tell you? You know what's going on in Israel today? You know the name Berland, Berland? Do I have to go further? Yitzchak, if you're not living in the country, if your mind is in Winchester, Pennsylvania, what do you want out of me? If I got to tell you what's going on with Breslov and Berlin today, you haven't looked at a newspaper in 4 months.
Okay, so
Thomas, yeah, he's asking.
I know what he's asking. What's
okay.
With
Berlin is in Morocco today. You know why? He ran away. The head of the Breslov, one of the yeshiva, one of the great tzaddik, and one of this, one of that. You know how many women have stepped forward to complain? God have mercy.
Who's this guy, Berlant?
The Rosh Yeshiva, the Tzaddik Hadar, the Baal Meifsim. He just came out that Lag BaOmer is Matir all Avera, therefore no one can investigate him about what went on. The Gilgul Neshama. God have mercy. Call it what you wish. God have mercy. But
anybody who talks bad about it doesn't have
a chiluk no halacha. That's what he says. Okay, so Mazayin says. Okay, gentlemen.
Wait, sir.
Let me go further.
What I see is very important.
Yeah.
When we talk about Rabbi Feldman, no one talks about Rabbi
Feldman. Right.
They say Dr. Feldman.
Right.
But when you speak about Dov Rabbi. You speak about Rabbi.
Yeah, I speak, but so they're called, people call them Dr. Revel too. I am Makpid. People don't even know I have a doctorate. You should know that. People don't know I have a doctorate because I'm Makpid. If you're going to call me by a title, it's Rav or Rabbi, whatever you wish. The doctorate is secondary.
But at the Fordham University, where the PhD, the head of man, the president, is definitely a PhD or a PhD.
Right.
He's known as Monsignor.
Right, right.
Or father.
Right.
They don't say doctor.
Right, I understand. That's
so
why the
Jews have an inferiority complex, you have to say
I agree with you. That's the way I interpret it. So I'm very mocked. Even Rabbi Lamb is Rabbi Lamb to me, not Dr. Lamb. Everyone says Dr. Lamb, Dr. Belkin. They used to say Dr. Revel too. But there are reasons why. Because they needed the doctorate to get academic recognition. So the same thing, when I started teaching BMT, everyone knew me as Dr. Rothkopf. No one knew I had smicha. Why? They needed academic recognition. So the doctorate became valuable to Michala, which was just beginning, you understand? Needed academic recognition. But anyway, this is part of this entire quandary. The tragedy is today that we might think this was only a problem when you had people who were not religious under the aegis of yeshiva. Lo aleinu, today, this problem is multiplied in every institution. It's frightening. And you have people who had reputations as Gedolei Yisrael and accusations that are endless. So, let it stand.
Just to end off.
Yeah.
If Dr. Grinstein, who is really a sweet human
being. Right, right.
If he said that he knew there was a mamzer in the school.
Right. He seemed
to. According to the halacha, what I
he's not allowed to reveal it.
No. A woman who is pregnant in that situation.
Yeah.
Is she allowed to have an abortion?
No. Abortion is killing.
And I read the Chubas that in this case.
You're talking about Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I'm well aware of what you're saying. I would not agree with that. And I'll tell you further, in the early 30s, no one had abortions. This was unheard of. You're talking language of 2014. This is 1932-33. But okay, I'm not pastoring
the same for the, what do you call it? She can never do tshuva.
What?
She's in Paris, she's in the husband will never receive her.
How does the husband know that the baby's not from him? Rov bilot acharei habal? Every posik in the world will be mata the kid lavo bakal. What's the shaila? But the Dr. Grinstein, the kid had free tuition because his real father, who evidently illegally paid for him, was a big shot in YU. All right. Anyway, I let the issue hang fire. I only say in my commitment to Torah, I never would believe the time would come that we would have problems like this with people with Torah reputation second to none. And YU has problems, Nei Yisrael has had problems, Borough Park in certain Hasidic, semi-Hasidic institutions, we have problems today. So this scandal, as my grandson said to me, at least it's a man and a woman. It does not make me happy, to say the least. It saddens me all the more. But this is life. And today, what I thought originally was a limited YU religious, irreligious problem, faculty members not religious, today it's gone way beyond, and we have to hope the yeshiva will survive the contemporary onslaught and has taken the necessary steps that there should never, ever be a question of pedophiles under the aegis of a Torah institution. Gentlemen, this is the Orthodox world. Yes.
Does Rebbe think that nowadays it should be, if somebody does more research on Revel, it should be published? Or it should be
published? Yeah, today, absolutely. No one's alive, no one's going to be embarrassed, and this is why I'm talking about it. So if anyone ever does research, at least this is the way I understand the facts. And I feel I owed Rabbi Revel a debt to defend him. People, it's easy to criticize. But Hakaret HaTov is Hakaret HaTov. And with the Rav, I gave you an example now. Anyone who knows the Rav story will agree. It's a fabulous example. Hakaret HaTov. And we all know in our own lives, Hakaret HaTov is so important, so big, so overwhelming. And at times, we'll overstep a boundary because of Hakaret HaTov.
How far would you take that? Meaning, obviously, if there were... You're
now coming into the world where there's no black and white. In other words, with Rabbi, with the Rav, and what happened with Mizrahi and the nursing homes, No one could conceive that they would keep bodies in a frigid air to collect money. You know what I'm talking about? You know what went on? Ask your father, ask your uncle. The talk in the 1970s was on the Israeli TV. Were you here yet? Where they showed the meanest man in the world. The Israeli TV picked that up from TV. He was primitive, black and white. But I knew the person involved. Malka went to school with her children, with his children. So we couldn't conceive of it. The Rav couldn't get it. All right, he pulled a shtick here, a shtick there. But to keep bodies in the morgue, in the frigidaire, until you knew the family was coming to visit again, because for 4 or 5 months you got per diem a certain amount of money from the American government. Could you conceive of that? The Rav couldn't conceive of that. Again, I'm a Malamed Skot. So he heard all the critique. Rebbe, it's davar yadu, it's not Lashon Hara, it's not this, it's not Azal. The Rav came up with a tremendous compromise. Shabbat Shalmi. You follow the Gemara in Bracha, 3-in-1. Came up, we want to triumph it, like they're good as a Rabbanim. So at least there were two other people who were called Presidium. Gentlemen, it didn't only impact on Yeshiva, Yeshiva College, the Orthodox world, the problems. The fact that Yeshiva and Yeshiva College was now running on its own, in my humble opinion, created extra velocity in the conservative movement becoming conservative. And here I want to spend some time. You're going to find it very fascinating, give you some fascinating sources. And I don't know, I'm throwing out a theory. Again, you have to be humble when you throw out a theory. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I think I'm right. Can't be certain. You see, Kol Zman there was talk of a merger. It was breaks on JTS. How far left can you go? The world is pressing you to merge. The Balabatim view the money issue as sacred. What, are we crazy to have two institutions turning out Orthodox rabbis at the same time, spending all this money? And they tried their best. And there was a lot of compromise on the table. I quote to you from Rakafet Aaron, Chalik 2, Volume 2. And beginning on page 178, you have some fabulous, insightful letters that give you the mindset of the leaders of Yeshiva, Yeshiva College, and JTS in the 1920s, when all this talk of merger was on the table. And here I have to be very thankful. I have to tell you that when I did this postdoctoral research, I already was living in Israel a few years. And I was totally dependent upon the archives of the Hebrew Union College, other archives, totally non-Orthodox. And I'm living in Israel, and you have, again, I allude, life was not easy then. And every stamp I put in a letter, I had to make a cheshbon if I have the money. And they answered all my correspondence and sent me endless Xerox copies of correspondence without charging me a penny. Their only request was that if I publish it in scholarship, I should acknowledge where I got it from. And I have to say, kol hakavod. Obviously, I'm not going to bother you with all the sources. You can check it out in Rakafet Aaron. By the way, the article in Rakafet Aaron appeared in a journal published by Tel Aviv University. It was called the Michael Journal, that dealt with Kihilat of Jews in Chutz Laretz. And here you see the people meeting. And this is Marshall to Adler. These were the biggest players. Louis Marshall, the famous judge. Who was Cyrus Adler, famous lawyer, judge, Supreme Court Lord Marshal. Cyrus Adler, the leading layman in the United States, lived in Philadelphia. Shomer Shabbos, a German, a from Jew, but an assimilated Jew. He lived before the Hitler period, the 20s into the 30s. In his writings, not one word about Hitler. Couldn't get, no concept. I mean, he died, I believe, was 39. No concept of the fear of what would happen at home in America. He was head of Dropsy College. He was head of JTS. He was a very, very good administrator. You find a letter from Marshall to Adler. And Marshall tells him, we'll get rid of Kaplan. I quote to you from the letter. I mean, you got to understand, the rabbi's a rabbi. The question of Kaplan's status, remember, I spoke about Mordechai Kaplan at length. And I told you he was an insurmountable problem. And I took you into his classroom. Remember, it was Scheffler, and we heard a lecture. And very upsetting that kids could, MTA graduates could hear a lecture of such stuyot and not know how to smack the professor's face and remain good Jews. But all right, this was Kaplan.
That's the same thing today. Do they teach JEPD at the Yeshiva College?
I don't know what you're referring to.
The higher biblical criticism.
I don't know.
Of course not.
The higher
biblical. Do the Yeshiva boys know JPD?
No. What does JPD stand for?
That the four different authors of the Tanakh.
Oh, so I understand. The holiness code. Okay.
They did teach that in some of the Bible classes. Not in that.
Okay, but
I don't think Smicha boys got an answer to that.
Yeah, but when Kaplan starts telling you their contradictions between science and Parshat Bereshit, a kid has to raise his hand and say, Professor Kaplan, how come the Torah doesn't talk about telephones? Cars?
Kaplan's greatest sin was he denied that there was a God.
Relax. I want to show you the inner...
Everything else falls apart.
Baruch Hashem, we're not here to criticize Kaplan. I'm here to show you how the Balabatim, there was a chance at merger, they were willing to knife him. Look what I'm going to show you now. This is from Louis Marshall. This is not our Iraq Cafe. And look who he's quoting. The question of Kaplan's status was discussed on various occasions. And Lamport, now this is the son of Nathan Lamport, who was a big admirer of Kaplan, who went with Kaplan and organized Kaplan's synagogue on 86th Street, Reconstructionism. Although a very warm friend and admirer of Kaplan, expressed the opinion that if his presence in the seminary were to operate as an insuperable objection, some way would have to be found to deal with the problem which would permit consolidation. You know, what is he saying? Well, no, how many of you have been in the rabbinate? Rabbi, you're a nice guy, we love you, but there's certain problems, the women complain, you don't seek another congregation. We're going to give you a nice settlement. This just happened in Livingston, New Jersey, more or less. The rabbi had been there for many years. The Kehillah moved more left, and they got rid of the rabbi. They gave him a nice parting gift. Everyone thinks the rabbi is very wealthy. They don't realize he has a flock of children who still have to go to college, and in the 60s, he's not going to find a job so easily at that age. So with all that they gave him, they didn't give him enough. Well, God have mercy, the poor rabbi. And he built the shul up. I know the area. I know what the area was. I know what he turned it into. So you see, here's Lamport willing to knife Mordechai Kaplan. Had there been a merger, Kaplan would be a footnote to history. But look what happened. 28, Yeshiva College opens. There's never going to be a merger again. The Depression comes in. Kaplan publishes his magnum opus, what Rabbi Rubin is referring to. And Rabbi Rubin's a great expert in these fields, much more than I know. Take my word for it. And Judaism as a Civilization, 1932, 33, 34, one book after another. The Depression comes in. Kaplan is the most popular teacher in the seminary. Who can believe in God if professors are standing on street corners selling apples? Kaplan's book was like manna from heaven. You don't have to believe in God. God may or may not exist. Judaism is a civilization. There are different reasons why we live as Jews. He was so popular. He conquered the market. What you could do in the 20s, you could not do in the 30s. You follow me, Shmuel? Had that merger taken place, who knows? Kaplan would be a footnote to history. But now, he was empowered. No one could stop him. He was no longer an impediment. The times were with him. Now, look from the other point of view. Who was the key rabbi? Rabbi Bernard Leventhal. Key player. He controlled the yeshiva. He made Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Revel. He made Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Belkin. Rabbi Belkin married his granddaughter, his first marriage, his first wife. This is part of the Belkin problem that everyone's afraid to write about it. How do you write about it? A Nili, a Gadol B'Torah, marries this woman, later outgrows her, marries another woman. It's a difficult problem. I agree it's a difficult problem. I once asked a member of your family, how did you manage to work out such a happy marriage? Because look at your role models. And I got a fabulous answer. I worked very hard on it. A fabulous answer. You follow? The lady was aware of the difficulty and she overcame it in dignity. Kol hakavod to such a person. I once gave her a tour of this building. Whenever she saw a picture of her grandfather, she lit up. Her face shone there. Beautiful. Halavai, our grandchildren should appreciate their grandparents like that. Now, Rabbi Leventhal is interviewed by Cyrus Adler in Philadelphia. And Rabbi and Cyrus Adler sends Louis Marshall a write-up of this interview, and what Rabbi Leventhal is thinking. And this is unbelievable, the way the man thought. He didn't want a merger, but he didn't want a merger for different reasons. He was mad already at Rabbi Revel because yeshiva was becoming more of a theological seminary. It was turning out rabbis. His concept was, it has to be like Europe. Europe, you went to a yeshiva to be learned, to sit and learn. It didn't matter what your profession is going to be. You could be a workman. You could be a scholar. You could be in any field whatsoever, a doctor, a lawyer, a businessman. But you had to know how to learn a Daf Gemara. Whoever heard of a yeshiva for the sake of turning out rabbis? And Rabbi Leventhal, this is mind-blowing, page 184. He said to the seminary, by insisting upon a college education, the seminary curtailed the amount of time which could be devoted to Jewish studies. His impression was, this is Leventhal, that a high school education sufficed. You don't need more. So, Cyrus Adler asked him, what about Yeshiva College? What is Rabbi Revel planning? And he tells Cyrus Adler that I don't believe there's ever going to be Yeshiva College. Rabbi Revel doesn't know what he's talking about. He totally was satisfied with Talmudical Academy and a big yeshiva, and if certain boys wanted, they could go on to CCNY or Columbia University. So you see, here there's a different element whatsoever. Yeshiva and yeshiva college, it's a movement, it's a concept. We gotta constantly combine. We have to be broad, we have to have knowledge, we have to live in two worlds, we have to be ger v'toshav. The seminary has one goal, to turn out rabbis who are traditional and speak English properly. Two different institutions moving light years away from each other. Until today, the seminary does not have any general studies under its roof. There was a Talmud in this room last year, the year before, a seminary graduate, his bachelor's from Columbia University. There was a Talmud in this Kollel 20 years ago, he's a famous rabbi in Jerusalem today, had smicha from the seminary branch in Los Angeles, a graduate of UCLA. Nothing to do with the University of Judaism. Two different developments here. Fascinating. Had they merged, it might have been a different story. But the world views were different. And now that there is a yeshiva and yeshiva college, we can go our own way, as we will see. Yes, Yitzchak.
Is it possible, I don't want to be a Lashon Hara, but that this gentleman called Rabbi Bernard Leventhal was purely jealous of American Orthodox rabbis who would come in. He, for example, and this has to be stated, did not really like Orthodox rabbis coming to Philadelphia. So Philadelphia was given away to the conservative movement.
What you're saying has a lot of truth to it, that all over the United States, and particularly in Philadelphia, where Rabbi Leventhal ruled with Yad Chazakah, they welcomed a conservative rabbi who was not a rival. But when a yeshiva college rabbi came in, Ein of us hat noch gedet Yiddish, but you can't get me a shin, shas, and paiskim, and someone who you could sell chametz through, there was a certain amount of jealousy, and that accusation is made, although not with names, but alluded to with endless documents in the Silver Era. And you're right, but I don't believe here. I think what you're seeing is his mindset that to make it big in America, it's enough to have a high school education. College is independent. You want, yes, no, but that a yeshiva should be involved with the college was beyond his comprehension, and he viewed even giving smicha in an organized fashion as demeaning and degrading to the yeshiva. Let me just give you one more document, and then time allowing, blow your minds. This document is very moving to me because I knew the person involved. How many of you have heard of the Bronx? Daniel? Any relatives who lived there? No one? Gentlemen, the Bronx, anyone who made it, moved from Harlem, east, the Lower East Side, you moved to Harlem. From Harlem, if you made it very big, you moved to the Upper East Side or the Upper West Side. If you made it middle class, you moved to the Bronx. At one time, the Bronx, more than Mechveis, 50% of the population was Jewish. No, what was the main street in the Bronx? The Grand Concourse. Everyone heard of the Grand Concourse. That was the touchstone. That's where Yankee Stadium was. That's where the wealthy Jews lived. On the Grand Concourse, there was a tremendous synagogue called Concourse Center of Israel. Synagogue had separate seating. It did not have a mechitza. The rabbi there, a 1911 graduate of the seminary. I believe he was rabbi there for most of his life. At the end, he was rabbi emeritus. Rabbi Max Drob, D-R-O-B, Drob, Rabbi Max Drob. I remember him like yesterday with a Van Dyke, a bit of a Talmud Chacham, served on the Rabbinical Assembly Halacha Committee, on Jewish Law, a Committee of Jewish Law. I remember him like yesterday. And Max Drob, if you want to talk about one of the most prominent conservative rabbis in New York, it was him. I taught in the Concourse Center of Israel, 60 to 61. Had a big Talmud Torah. The head of it was a Mira graduate, Rabbi Leonard Pearl, and the faculty was all from. I ran the youth services, which was in the Beis Medrash, where I davened and had a machitza. And after davening Hashkamer in the Beis Medrash, I ran the youth services. It was a very interesting year in my life, 60 to 61. My wife's family lived further north, but they could not ever have davened in the Concourse Center because there was no machitza. Where they davened, the young Israel of Kingsbridge had a machitza. All the other shuls did not have machitzas, although they had very famous rabbis at the time, rabbis whose names you adore, the Rabbi Heschel Schachter, who just passed away, Marshal of the Jewish Center, Rabbi Israel Miller, who passed away a number of years ago, who plays a great role in keeping this kollel on the map. Their shuls did not have machitzas. They had separate seating. During Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, there were big problems there. Rabbi Miller's shul had mixed seating during Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. There were bitter fights until it reached the point that they could separate the men and the women totally and properly. Now, Rabbi Drob meets with the heads of the yeshiva, and he writes a letter to Cyrus Adler. Cyrus Adler shows the letter with Rabbi Drob's permission to Louis Marshall. And he puts down the problems of curriculum. Yeshiva would stress Shas and Poskim. As you all know, in JTS, a rabbinical seminary, Shas and Poskim was one of many subjects. And Rabbi Drob writes that if we would get rid of the JTS curriculum and have a yeshiva-like curriculum, such a curriculum would mean that in the future, men of the type of Jacob Kahn, Israel Goldstein, Norman Salad, and Elias Solomon will be kept out of the ministry. These were all graduates of the seminary. I give you footnotes, I give you details of each one. These were the most prominent seminary graduates. All of them were prominent rabbis in New York. All of them, by our standards, were Amei Haaretz. How much did they learn? How much did they know? And personally, with all my desire to see an American clergy that is able to decide ritual questions, I would any day prefer Jacob Cohn to T.S. Now, we don't know who T.S. is. We have to get hold of a seminary graduate of the 1910s, the 1920s, but I have a footnote that T.S. had to be a prominent Yudapeyish Talmud Chacham who wandered into the seminary and got ordination from the seminary. But he could not hold a decent rabbinate. Favos et geret Yiddish, nicht Englisch. Und wenn et geret Englisch, et geret mit a big accent that everyone could tell he was a greenhorn. That has to be T.S. So you see, he says right away that the curriculum could never be adequate. We could never work out a merger. This is scientific scholarship, and this is traditional Shas and Poskim. And I have to say, to the credit of Yeshiva University, until today, with all that has happened and all that has changed, but the greatest goal, I hope, of any student in Yeshiva University who's going into the rabbinate, that's going to learn, is to be a Talmid Chacham and Master Shas and Paiskim. I hope so. I gotta say, to the credit, look what happened to JTS. But once there's no merger, they can go their own merry way. Today, JTS, it's beyond words, what they call Talmud. I saw a curriculum that you'll take a class in Talmud, they pin up a few Gemaras, and you learn them, and you discuss them, and you try to see the ethical implication, you try to see how it affects the world, and it's beyond comprehension. This person has no access to Shas, the Poskim, the Paskim, to Halacha, to Rishonim, to Achronim. But calls Mundus, talk of a merger, you can't do it. Now, then he raises the problem Yitzchak raises. The yeshiva group not only objects to our present curriculum, but to the method of instruction. It is unalterably opposed to the historical method in teaching the Talmud and to any critical method of interpreting the Bible. Even Professor Hoshandin's, that's Jacob Hoshander, a biblical scholar who lectured at Dropsy and JTS and was very conservative in his approach to biblical criticism, even Professor Hoshander's conservative view is treifa to them. I do not know how we can recede from our conviction on this point. Okay. Then he goes one step further. The yeshiva group is unalterably opposed to sending rabbis to any but strictly orthodox congregations. This would mean the breaking of relations with those synagogues who are today the backbone of United Synagogue. You all know what United Synagogue is. It's the organization of synagogues that are part of the conservative movement.
Is that true?
So here, Max Strobe, writing in the late 20s, is expressing the terrible problem of the conservative temple, no machitza, the innovations, early Friday night services, etc. And what Joni said is very fascinating. By the time the 30s came to an end, the 40s into the 50s, even into the 60s, the yeshivot filled these congregations with mismachim. Not just yeshivas Rebbe Yitzchok Chanan, Torah V'Das. In my time in Philadelphia, the biggest conservative rabbi was a Torah V'Das graduate, Rabbi Pilkotz. RJJ, Chaim Berlin. In my time, the name I don't remember, but check it out, Rabbi Pickholz. He has family living here. From what I gather, all his generations are 100% from the Rabbi Wernick. Don't even use the term Wernick, Rabbi. It hurts me to use the term. A Talmud of Rabbi Yitzchak Kutna became a big shot. I believe that's his son, who today runs the conservative movement, is one of the executive directors, if I have it correctly. It has to be checked out. RJJ graduates. You even have Lakewood graduates who wound up in the semi-Orthodox synagogues. So what you, and Chicago, the bitter battle in Chicago on this topic shapes the world until today. Rav Regensburg permitted Lachatchila graduates of Chicago going into traditional synagogues. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik arrived in Chicago and Asid with a tremendous aleph, and that machloket lives on until today. Was Rav Aaron correct? Of course, today traditional synagogues have essentially disappeared because the entire lifestyle of the American Jew is totally different. You have in America today, without exaggeration, unto 1 million Jews who are Shomer Shabbos. All right, it's not Israel. But you have unto 1 million. You take the New York Times, who would dream, mi pilel or mi milel, that the New York Times is going to have articles on when you can buy Dunkin' Donuts after Shabbos. And the New York Times has to explain in English, Kidei Sheyase, with pictures of the signs in the Dunkin' Donuts stores that you cannot buy Dunkin' Donuts until 30 minutes after Shabbat for those of you who are Sabbath observers. Well, who would ever believe? The New York Times has to have articles on an Erev. Why in Brooklyn Jews are killing each other over an Erev? Now the battle has ended in Borough Park. It's spread to Williamsburg. Who could ever believe what happened? So today, with all the innovation in the Orthodox world and the counter-reaction, Chovevei Torah and Rabbi Heschel Goldwasser and all that has happened in the Torah world, but with all the counter-reaction, it is a given that you have to have a mechitza. You follow me? It's very fascinating. You can give women aliyah, you can have women balei tefillah, but you have to have a mechitza. So times have changed, but these machlokot were earth-shaking. Gentlemen, there is no question. Had the merger taken place, the conservative movement would not have developed into what it became. There is no doubt in my mind that Mordechai Kaplan would have been fired. They still could have done it in the 1920s. They could not do it in the 1930s when Mordechai Kaplan was king of the Jews. There is no question that the entire curriculum would have been altered. And as I said last week or 2 weeks ago, they would have worked out a yeshiva. That's a yeshiva al Tarat HaKodesh, and everything is Europeish. And then they'll have a graduate school where you'll be exposed to Wissenschaft des Judentum, and that would be a more seminary-like program. And you do have Bernard Revel Graduate School. We'll come to that next week. That's also an outshoot of all that happened. There is no question in my mind that had there been a merger, the seminary would have been controlled. It couldn't have moved as left as it did. But once the merger doesn't happen, the world gradually changes. The Orthodox world, YU is no longer everybody's idol. YU is no longer without fault or blame. YU is caught up in a cauldron of reality. And at times there are criticisms, and these criticisms hang fire until today. Is YU right, wrong? Every issue has to be discussed individually. Every one of us has their own opinion. I can find many faults with YU, but I also will tell you, I haven't come up with a better solution for how to raise a Torah generation capable of conquering the world, l'Torah u'l'Tiferet, outside of YU. It's a fabulous place, with all the problems. The problems of that we have now on a sexual level, that is frightening. That has to be totally eradicated. Not that, but it's not just YU. Lo Aleinu, I don't want to mention, it's the whole Torah world that's caught up with these problems. The Litvish Welt, the Chassidish Welt, the YU world, the heads of the world. We've had problems. I can't. It's frightening. But JTS remained JTS, went more left. This was the reality. I'll pick up next week and I'll show you an unbelievable document that says it all with JTS. The reality of the situation after 1930. Now, what do we do today? Okay, so the Sapphire scandal, it's a fallout. What do you do? We religious people. People that have the attitude. Could you imagine the woman sends back an email, I'm an Eshadish and I have children. And this maneuver sends an email to her, Ozma, translated in English. So what? What does that have to do with man acting like a sexual animal? It's frightening. But what do you do? What does Lander College do? What does Machon Lev do? They censor. Do we want an institution that censors? A young man came to my class yesterday, a Talmud of mine through the website, met me for the first time. He's a friend of Chesky's. And he told me he's going to Bar Ilan. Why not Machon Lev? He wants a broader education. There's a kid with beard and payas, but he wants liberal arts. All right? These questions hang fire. JTS went its merry way. There was nothing to control it after 29-30. My dear students, I have a very... First of all, I want to comment on two letters I got. One letter says nice things about Rakefet. And I just want to state, I've heard these compliments all over the world, from Australia to South Africa. And the heart of the compliment is very simple. Rakefet, you're a normal guy. And that's exactly what Torah is about. If you're a Litvak Mizayin Unshtik, a book just came out, The Legacy, by the new chief rabbi of South Africa, Rabbi Warren Goldstein, not so new, he's there about 10 years, but I met him when he was just starting, and Berenwine. It's dual authorship, every chapter is written by someone else, but the real heavy chapters are written by Rabbi Warren Goldstein. Read that book carefully, and you'll see that Rakefet and Goldstein are on the same wavelength. And he has one fabulous chapter on Frumkeit. And the bottom line is, there's normalcy to life. Torah was given for this world. Unshtick. I don't have to elaborate. So I want to thank Alan Blau, Dr. Blau, for his very kind words. I wish I could agree with him, but I'm not on that level, but I try to be. But nevertheless, I accept the compliment and I add one concept to it. What they taught me in Lakewood, Erzan Omala. I never forgot that. I never knew what it meant when I learned Lakewood. He's normal, what's the big deal? Later in life, I learned, boy, is that a compliment. That someone should be bucking and shasim paiskim, be a gadol b'Torah, and walk with 2 feet solidly on the ground. By the way, that was Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe David Tendler, when he yells and shouts about what they do to my father-in-law, he's saying exactly the same thought, that what characterized Reb Moshe with all his gadlut, he just was a normal human being who lived in this world. That characterizes the Rav. What came across last Thursday night at the memorial for the Rav, as Rakefet said, quoting Tova Lichtenstein, with his grandchildren, he got down on the floor and played with them. And that, of course, was my takeoff point for the Rav in baseball. Okay. I want to make one more comment. I received an inquiry here from a Talmidah who's evidently been listening for quite a while, Eliana, and a number of questions about Aliyah. I was very moved by the letter. And I just want to tell you a little story, and I want to comment on it. A true story. The second home of BMT was on Rehov Mili. I remember a Talmud, I don't want to mention his name because the story may or may not be totally complimentary, although I think it is. He was young at the time, and he was in BMT, and he fell in love with this very nice young lady who was the daughter of the cook. We had our own kitchen, had a tremendous cook, and she was an Israeli lady of Eidot HaMizrach origins, and he's walking me in Rehov Neely, Rebbe, I'm going to get engaged. You know, you came to Israel older, he's going to get engaged at the end of the year, and he said to me, tell me, after you have 4 children, can you use birth control? So I said to him, are you serious? You're not even engaged yet. You're not even married yet. You don't know if you can have children. I said, Bezrat Hashem, after you have 4 children, we'll discuss the issue. And he later married, and I think he did have 4 children, but the marriage ends in divorce. It's not a happy story on that level. But I think he did have 3 or 4 children. Then he remarried. I was once in an affair where the rabbi, the chazan, and the educational director were all my students at the shul, and all 3 were divorced and into second marriages. And that was not that long ago. He was one of them. But you see, people in life would like to have guarantees. And I know that feeling. You're a young man. Some of you are going back, going into the rabbinate. I know what I was like in 23, going when I was 23 years of age, going into the rabbinate. And believe me, I had absolutely no guarantees. And the first stellar, as you know, I had a lot of Achmas Nefesh. I was young. I couldn't handle it. Today, I could be a prince there, but I wouldn't be interested in such a small position. But this is human nature. I want to tell you, there are no guarantees in life. The Medrash, I quoted the Zohar many years ago when I started Shurim on the B'Samim Rosh. I quote, Hakol Talui B'Mazal Afilu Sefer Torah Shebehechal. That everything in life, you have to be mazel, the right person, the right place, the right time. When it comes to Aliyah, I believe with all my heart, you have to ask yourself one question. Do you want to be another social security number, or do you want to change the course of history for the Torah people, for the Jewish people? Those of us that have come here, and in this room there are a number of Olim sitting here that have been here for many decades. If we put together the years we've been here, I think we get up to 100 years or more, putting us all three together. Over 100 years. We've changed Israel. Each of us has made a contribution. We've changed our lives. We're a lot more than a social security number. There's such a sense of achievement. Who could believe more than 6 million halachic Jews are at Mata Kodesh after Hitler and only growing and growing? But you have to take the risk. There are absolutely no guarantees, but somehow, if you made up your mind, you're going to find your place. Going to succeed. It may not happen overnight. I don't say life was a bed of roses here. I once had a poster outside my apartment. We didn't promise you a bed of roses and a big picture of a thorn bush. Now I have Rakafet, the big poster on the 60th anniversary of Israel. The flower they used was a cyclamen, was a Rakafet. But if you make up your mind, You're gonna find your niche. You're gonna find your way. You're gonna work out, and you're going to see it's gonna fall into place, and you're gonna have tremendous nachat, and you're gonna have tremendous nachat that's gonna bother you because your kids are not even going to understand what you went through to come here, to give up a language you understood, a culture you understood, a banking system you understood. So no pressure. But I want to read a postscript. It is much, much easier today. When we came in Aliyah, there were so few Americans here. So I got advice from someone I love and adore. I recall his name reverently, a name of a Gadol B'Yisrael, Rav Avram Subit, Meir Kahana's Chavruta from Mir Yeshiva. And Avram Subit, whose wife, Shoshana Talansky, Shoshana Subit, Mesh Talansky's sister. She's the widow of Avram Subit. And Avram Subit came to me and he said to me, Aaron, you got to succeed in Israel. Forget about your American method of chinuch. You have to become an Israeli. You have to learn how to be machanech here. Thank God I didn't listen to him. Today, when they look for chinuch, everyone from the Chesed Yeshiva through the entire Israeli system, part of the role model they take is the American Mechanech and what we developed our Mat Necha and brought here to Israel. Today it's a different world. Today you have Nefesh B'Nefesh. When I think back what we went through, the Yisurim and the lines, and we had to wait in the Mizrat HaPnim and the Tudat Sekhud and the citizenship, and today you have Nefesh B'Nefesh. You don't know what an achievement that is. Kol HaKavod to Rabbi Bless and to Gelbart, who financed the Nefesh B'Nefesh. Excuse me?
Fass.
Rabbi Fass. Oh, right. Rabbi Fass. And Gelfand. I hope I have his name correct. And he gave the first $1 million. So today, Baruch Hashem, and you have such a large Anglo community that the problem is just the opposite. You know what the problem is today? That in Beit Shemesh, kids come out of high school not knowing Hebrew. They can't read modern Hebrew. Kids who are born here, grew up here, everyone speaks English. Their teacher speaks English. The kids speak English. All they do, they speak Hebrew in school, a broken Hebrew, and every other minute their thought process is in English. And the computer is in English. Today you have the opposite problem. Mi milel, umi pilel. We came in, it was a different world. But if the commitment is there, you will be matzliach. So I encourage everyone and anyone, the future is here. A social security number, or to move history for the Jewish people. Join us. The problems will fall into place. They are surmountable. Gentlemen, a fabulous article, something we've discussed over the years in our Sunday class. Who's married? What do you do when you get married? Who got married in Israel? Get married in Israel, you have to put a sum of money into the ketubah, right or wrong. What did you put in? Let's hear the sum. 18,000? You don't even remember. Call your wife and ask her, you cheapskate. 36,000, what did you put in? People here, the minute, particularly the Sfadim, 1 million shekel. It's considered a good omen that you won't get divorced. Tell me, what happens if you do get divorced? Is it enforceable? Here you have a tshuva of a based in Israel, that in Haifa, that just had to deal with this problem. Very fascinating. They reached a compromise. Number two, once again, anyone who's going to daven on Yom Yerushalayim, if you want the davening ready-made for you, here it is. They were giving it out of my shul. I took a few for you. And next week, Be'ezrat Natan Li Yov Koach. By the way, Wednesday, I'm speaking in Netanya, and it's the second half of the press conference. So I hope it'll be picked up on... Yes, Yitzchak.
Could you mention a word, since we are now after the class? What's going on with either Rabbi Staub or Rabbi Ariel? Why all of a sudden Drukman got involved in this? Rabbi Drukman.
It's very simple. Let me just finish that. Wednesday we're speaking in Netanya. Next Sunday, Monday, we have regular classes. Then we'll decide further. Wednesday, Thursday, Chag HaShavuot, Chag Matan Torateinu, and Shmuel, you will be very happy. You're not in America, sweating out Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Here on Friday, you're taking a shower, you're laughing at the world, you're buying fresh challah. Baruch Hashem, you came on Aliyah. Be thankful. What do you say, Josh?
It's Tuesday night. It's Wednesday, Thursday.
What? When is Shavuos?
Wednesday.
Thursday.
It's not 3 days in a row this year?
Yes, sir.
One second. Look at the calendar. Goes, I got a Shaila. Yeah, so what the heck was the Shana they were asking me? Don't tell me they had it wrong.
Open up the calendar.
Very good. That's very good. So then I stand corrected. I see. Maybe they flew on. So Tuesday night is Shavuos. But we can still meet Sunday, Monday. You're right. Tuesday night is Shavuos. Wednesday, Thursday. I see why I got the shalat. They flew. They're flying on. I took for granted they're flying on Friday. They're flying on Thursday. Okay. With the chief rabbin, it's very simple. Whatever happens in America is aped in Israel. 15, 20 years later. In Israel, too, there's a terrible counter-reaction to the Haredi world. Part of that counter-reaction gave birth to Tzoha. Tzoha has been influenced by Chovevei Torah. On the other hand, they recognize that Chovevei Torah has gone too far. Within the Mizrahi world today, there are two tremendous elements. Just like the Hasidic world is split, the Litvish world is split, the Wayu world has its splits. Baruch Hashem, we Jews, am kishei orif. So we have to fight with each other, which is commendable in the sense we're alive and kicking. One element is the Chardali world, Charedim Datim Lumiyim. They are Choshesh, that Soha may be a little bit like Chovevei Torah. Chovevei Torah element supports Soha, because they have declared a rebellion against the Haredi world. Now, Rabbi Stav, who I knew personally, grew up around the corner. I yet remember his father. His father was a Briska Talmud Chacham, a big Mizrachiite, but a Litvish Rav, a big Talmud Chacham, this Talmud of Rav Velvel. Rabbi Stav is a big Talmud Chacham, and he could very well be an excellent chief rabbi. Rabbi Ariel, to the Chadali world, he's totally acceptable. There's no question about his learning, about his frumkeit. He's older. There's also the feeling, let Rabbi Ariel be chief rabbi now, and Rabbi Stav, you have another 10 years to grow, and you will achieve it. This, to me, is the heart of the machlokas, leaving out all personalities. You know, like any other machlokas, it's shalom lishma, it gets involved as well. This, to me, appears to be the heart of the machloket. Now, from the Haredi point of view, Rav Ariel, they will accept, like Rav Kook. In other words, the Haredim understand that Rav Kook is a giant of Torah, a giant of Yirat Shemayim. They don't agree with his hashkafas, but they'll accept Rav Ariel. Rav Stav, they will worry already that he's in the camp. I'll give you an example of a Rav in the world of Rabbi Stav, who the Chari world does not accept, Rabbi Riskin. They will worry that he's a bit to the left, or what they imagine to the left, a bit independent. He will not have that same acceptance. And that's why there's such friction and machloket at this point. What will happen is anybody's guess. But Ari Derry becomes a key figure now as a result of last Thursday, Friday, okay? And I have a feeling that whatever Derry will decide will be the final say. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, time will tell. But Derry is a power maker. He is a king today, okay? Whether we like it or not is our feelings, but that's the reality. Gentlemen, I apologize. Well, thank you for I was in wonder. I haven't looked at a calendar yet for the week after this. But let's see that I have it right. This week, Wednesday is Yom Yerushalayim, and Friday is Rosh Chodesh. Right or wrong? So far, so good. Okay. Intuimi, thank you so much. Intuimi again in health and happiness. Das for Danya, and a big mazel tov to Charlie Hexter. Next week is an important... This week is an important week in your life. Everything should be l'kavod, l'tiferet, lots of mazel and bracha, and only good news on all sides from this point further. And you have a gentleman sitting in back of you who can be a role model. So, be'ezrat Hashem, and as you corrected me with the Gemara in Saita, that bet amid the Aleph, the Kriyat Yamsev should be minimal and the Nachat should be maximal. That's the best bracha anyone can give. You know who gives a bracha like that? Your heritage, my children's heritage, Rav Hirsch. The end of the 19 letters, he gives a very similar bracha. Look at it. Rav Hirsch, pristine Rav Hirsch, I'll put it that way. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And to meet again in health and happiness. That's for Danya. The article is for the taking, and the davening is for the taking.
Let's see what the article is. So what was the compromise?
Read it. It's very fascinating.
But I do what you said. I put in Adam White in the figure.
No, you can write in a figure, but keep it at 18,000. Keep it at 18,000.
Scott, thank you.
Brooklyn to you, Brooklyn to you, Brooklyn to you. So, you know who's here now? Schlesberg.
I know, I spoke to Elliot. Him. He told me it didn't.
Right. We had a nice.
He just left yesterday.
Yeah, no. Next time they'll stay through Shavuos, because I paskin for him, he can keep one day. To be firm, he doesn't have to do malacha the second day. But he has an apartment here.
Quick question.
God damn.
Yeah. Just in terms of when when Rabbi Leventhal was upset, in terms of like all you need is a high school education, right. Didn't why you at that point already have yeshiva college?
No.
Oh, it was just yeshiva?
No, that's 26, 27 when they're talking about the merger.
It's only 28.
He
didn't believe the college would work out. He was making sense. So college started September 28th.
That
was for yeshiva, not
college. What was Sapphire?
Sapphire was with yeshiva from 1950. He helped organize the high school.
No, but then when did Sapphire start teaching there?
The college? 28.
Oh, meaning he's the one to start. Okay, fine. Meaning we went back in history. Meaning we started with Sapphire and then you quoted.
You didn't catch the break. I should have made that in accelerate. Maybe I accelerated too quickly. But the idea was very simple. I wanted to show you that the organization of Yeshiva College had tremendous impact. On one hand, how it affected Yeshiva and Yeshiva College and all the problems it engenders. So that took me to Sapphire. Then I went back to JTS.
Right.
And I'm showing you how all these problems might have been different, but the minute Yeshiva College went its way, JTS gradually said, the hell with you, you go your way, go fly a kite, we're going our way. And I'll show you that next week, black and white.
Wouldn't YU also be more to the left, though? Meaning, I'm sure they would have totally conformed to REIT, JTS, if the merger happened, and not the other way around? There wouldn't have been some compromise?
No, there's no question that YU, JTS might have been